My name is Olivia. I'm 16 years old. Today is November 26, 2017, and I'm speaking with Brian, who is my dad. We are recording this interview in Parker, Colorado. Okay. What was your childhood like growing up?
My childhood was good. It was like just about anybody else's childhood. Got to play out in the streets and not a lot of video games back in the early 70s. So all of our fun times were outside riding bikes and just goofing around.
Okay. Who did you feel like you could relate to the most talk to growing up?
I think I probably talked to my dad the most growing up. I think I just related to what he had to say to me, and I took his advice to heart.
Okay. As a kid, what was your dream job?
My dream job?
Mm-hmm.
My dream job as a kid was I wanted to be a fireman.
Why?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I wanted to be a fireman because it was a really cool thing to do. But as I grew older, I wanted to get into a field where I could help people.
Okay. Who was your biggest influence when you were younger?
My biggest influence when I was younger. I would probably say, so when I was a kid, I had a lot of anxieties about school and friends and whatnot. And I had a second grade teacher at the elementary school I went to, and he became my buddy. He drove a Trans Am, which was a really cool car back in the day, and he lived down the street from us. And so he helped me at school a lot and helped me make a lot of friends and let me hang out with his really cool car.
Is that person like still in your life today?
I have not seen him in, that was second grade, so that was a long time ago. So I don't know.
Okay.
And
did you feel like you could talk to your siblings about stuff? Or like they had any influence on your life?
My siblings probably not, because I'm the youngest of three, and so my brother is 8 years older than I am, 7 years older than I am, and my sister is 5 years older than I am. So they were much closer in age, I was, because there's a big age gap between the two of us, it was difficult for us to do things alike because they were off doing other things that little brothers aren't doing.
So do you think that, like, they had a better relationship, them two, than you did with them?
That they had a better relationship with each other than I had with them?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I think they were probably closer growing up just because they went to high school at the same time, and they had a lot of friends that had siblings that were the same age. So I don't know. Maybe. I never really asked.
Okay. What made you want to go, like, into the medical field?
Again, I wanted to help people. And when I graduated from high school, I was not really sure, like most kids, what life had in front of me. So I didn't go to school right away. I took a year off, and I worked full-time, actually two full-time jobs. And after I did that for about 6 months, I really started to realize that I needed to get back into school. And there was a great program that I could get involved in that, would not only get me, the education that I needed to become a fireman, but would also get me into the physical academy end of firefighting.
So do you think that if you hadn't taken a year off and you went straight into school, it would have, like, the outcome would have been different?
I think it would have. To be honest, if I wouldn't have taken the time off, I probably wouldn't have finished school.
Okay.
Just because I needed that time to figure out all the uncertainties that were there.
Okay. After going through all the training that you did to, like, become a paramedic, would you, like, go back and do it again if you could?
Absolutely.
What was, like, one thing you took away from it?
One thing that I took away from it is people need help. And not, you know, it's kind of silly. People need help in a variety of ways. You know, when I was doing my internship on the ambulance, a lot of elderly people would call because they would have to go to the doctor, but they would call 911 because they would either get confused or were scared, or there's a lot of variety of a lot of variables and things that can happen for people to do that. But a lot of times the elderly just need someone to talk to and to hold their hand and to let them know that it's okay.
So what do you think one of, like, the hardest parts of that was?
The hardest part of...
of, like, being on the ambulance.
The stress. It's a very stressful job. Just because you don't know, there's a lot of stress that comes with it. One, you have to be very knowledgeable, highly educated and highly skilled in emergency services, emergency medicine. And so there's that. So when the radio goes off, you could have anything from a woman just went into labor to someone that's in full cardiac arrest, which means they're having a pretty massive heart attack, mm-hmm. right? Or you might get a call because, you know, a kid fell out of the tree and broke his arm. So, I mean, the stress is there. And then, you know, one of the biggest stresses is getting to where you need to be, right? People see the ambulance or the fire truck driving down the street, and they don't, you know, they don't realize how heightened their senses are inside those vehicles, that they're stressed because they're going to a scene and they have a lot of thoughts and they're preparing themselves emotionally and mentally. But on top of that, they have people driving in front of them that don't understand which direction they should go or how they should go to get out of the way. So, stress.
What was one of the biggest, like the, not like the best things, but like what was one of the better things you could, like, look forward to? Kind of like what got you to get up and, like, what got you motivated every day?
Well, one, you're helping people, right? And a lot of times you're helping people, unfortunately, in bad situations. So, you know, a really cool thing is to get called to someone that's in full cardiac arrest, right? So their heart has stopped, they're not breathing.
Mm-hmm.
The bad things are going to happen, and you can get them stabilized quickly, get them to the hospital, and then either see them or hear a day or two later that they're up walking around.
Okay. Also with that, so would you say that you saw, like, more elderly people, or, like, was it a variety of, like, kids and, like, all that?
I saw all ages.
Okay.
All ages.
All right. Has there been a specific event in your life that you've, like, learned from and, like, you'd go back and change?
Just in general?
Mm-hmm.
A specific event in my life that I've learned from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, if you take school, for example, that's a pretty specific event in life. And as you're growing up as a kid, you get thrown into all kinds of circumstances that you think are just over the top at the time. But I guess the one thing that I would learn from, if I knew then what I know now, is those issues don't even register on the scale, right? So, you know, I think just in general terms, and I don't know if I'm answering this question the right way for you, but I think a specific event is school, regardless of what happens, how tough it is, because I had a tough time in school, right? I didn't do very well in high school, but I turned that around after I got out. I graduated, right? And went on to better things. So I think the specific event is just school in general.
Okay. Do you think that if, like, maybe you put, not that if you put more effort, but if, like, school went different and, like, you did better in school than you did, like, would it have had, a better outcome? Like, would you...
Absolutely.
Have, like...
Yeah. Yeah. School... Look. School's tough, right? It's because learning is tough. You're not going to learn things because they're easy. That's just not how things go. So sometimes you got to do some tough things to figure it out, because those are just individual lessons that all stack up in life. So you learn right from wrong, right? And then you learn the facts. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's much more to school than just showing up, blowing through it, getting to graduation, and being done.
Yeah.
There's lots of lessons in between that to learn from.
And then going back to what you said about your brother and sister being in school, like, together.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that had kind of an impact on, like, you not doing so well? Because, like, they always had each other to lean on. Or if something went wrong where you didn't really have...
No, family. Mine was different because we moved a bunch.
Oh, okay.
So they went to school basically in the neighborhood that we grew up in. And then when my family started moving, they were old enough to drive and they were kind of doing their own thing. So even though we may have moved out of district or moved across town or whatever it was, they still could drive to where all their friends were because they opted to do that. And I was always kind of the new kid, so I had to make new friends and kind of be accepted in, and that's tough to do, especially in high school.
Okay. If you could go back and change one thing, like, about school or about, like, after you graduated or anything, what would it be and why?
If I could change one thing? Just in school?
Like, after, like, anything. Like, from the time, like, you were in school to when you graduated to when you went through training to when you stopped being a paramedic or whatever.
Yeah, I probably, the one thing that I, you know, it's easy to say would have changed, is I would have continued with my education, right? And I would have got into the administrative end of firefighting to where I'm running more of the business end of things instead of being on a fire truck or on an ambulance. That's the one thing that I probably should have done, and I didn't.
So you think running things and kind of like being the boss would have been better than being, like, on the ambulance or on a fire truck?
It's tough to say. I don't know if better is the right term, but that's a different avenue to go down. Okay. It's a very tough field to get into. Yeah. It's even harder to get hired on It's physically demanding. Your education never stops. You're always learning. You're always being tested. So I don't know if one of those two are the better, but I think there's two different roads you can get into. One is the administrative piece of it, where you're helping manage the processes and putting new policies in place and making sure that safety is where it's at, or you just stay down the road of being a fireman or paramedic.
Mm-hmm. After going, like, what was the hardest part of, like, trying to become a paramedic, like the training or like actually being on the, like, ambulance and, like, seeing things happen? Like, what was the hardest part for you?
The hardest part?
Mm-hmm.
Studying.
Really?
Yeah. Because when you go in and apply for a job to be a firefighter or paramedic, right, you don't just submit your application and they don't just call you and say, hey, come down, let's talk. There's a series of tests. Remember I said earlier, everything... you're always being tested.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts out day one when you do submit your application that you want to apply. And the first thing that you do is you show up and you take a written test. It takes about 2.5 to 3 hours to get through one of those tests. And it's everything from math to chemistry to geometry to just general studies, reading comprehension. I mean, you name it. Everything that you do and learn all day, every day in school is made up of this test. And it's a very, very difficult test to take and a very difficult test to pass. Most people that take that test don't pass them.
Okay.
Those tests you have to take repeatedly over and over and over again because there's a process of how those tests go. So that is one of the hardest. That's one of the hardest things. All that other stuff is hard too, but you figure out how to cope with that. Taking the tests and studying is difficult. It's very time consuming.
Okay. And then, so just looking at, like, from what you've actually seen and, like, been involved in, like, the accidents or reports or calls that you've gotten,
mm-hmm.
would you want your kids to go into that, or...
If that's what my kids wanted to do, I would encourage them 110%. It's a great career. If you talk to anybody that does it, they will tell you that. They work, depending on the department that they work on, they work for, they'll work anywhere from 10 to 12 days a month.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Doesn't sound like much, but those are 24-hour shifts.
Yeah.
They're part of a firefighters union, and that comes with some great benefits. And most firefighters work for 20, 25 years, and they retire. So a lot of them get into it because they can start a carpentry business part-time and do that on their days off. Or... they retire early. Say they're one of the fortunate people that they get on the fire department and they're early 20s, right?
Mm-hmm.
20 or 25 years down the road, they're retired and they're, say, let's just say 50. And that's pretty unheard of these days for someone to retire at that age.
Yeah. And then do you think that, like, doing that kind of stuff takes, like, an emotional toll on people?
It's very difficult, and I think depending on the fire department that someone works for, all varies, right? I mean, if you are, if you work for Denver Fire Department and you're station number one, which is downtown, right? So if you work there, it's right off a spear, so you see a lot of stuff down there that is very inherent to major downtown cities, right? Just the craziness that kind of comes along with the downtown area. But then you could work for, like, South Metro, which is out here where we are. And not that you don't get to see all that stuff that goes on, but it's more of a you know, suburban setting where things are just a little more relaxed, if you will. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Why did you stop, like, working for in, like, the medical field?
Why? Mm-hmm. Well, there were a couple of reasons. One is it was, so when I was doing this was a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
This was in the early 1990s. And so the funding that came through for state and local ordinances to hire firefighters, they had to have a lot of they had a lot of policies and procedures in place that made their equal opportunity hiring more fair across the board, and because of that, if you were a minority or a female at the time, and again, this is the early 1990s,
mm-hmm.
those cities were given more money from the federal government to hire those people. So, for example, in 1992, I applied to work for the Denver Fire Department.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied. They were going to hire 100 firefighters because 150 were going to retire over the next 2 years. So they had to backfill some people pretty quickly. And I worked my tail off to pass this test, to study. And I showed up for the test, and there were 1,100 people there to take the test.
Dang.
Right? That was a lot of people.
Yeah.
They actually had to run out the convention center downtown to do it, and it took 3 days to get everyone through the testing. So it was very complicated, lots of stress, lots of what ifs, right? Lots of butterflies. And I went down and I took the test, and the highest you can score on one of those tests is 105.
Mm-hmm.
And I scored 104. I missed one question. On the test. And so what happens is when you take the test, you would take a test. If you passed it, then you would get sent off to the next step, which is there's a variety of ways. You can do a physical test,
mm-hmm.
right? Lots of physical activities, physical agility, or you can do a psychological test, or you can do another written test. Or you can be sent straight off to the administrators and they do what's called an oral board, where you do an actual interview,
mm-hmm.
in front of like 10 people, and they just fire questions at you. And that's pretty typical to get one of these jobs. But I scored 104. I missed one question on the test, and I was really confident that I was going to go places. And no one calls you. It's all done by mail. You don't get an email. You don't get any of that stuff. Or at least back then they didn't. They mailed you.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the test. I knew what my score was because they grade it right there in front of you. And I knew that I just missed one. I was on cloud nine. I was really excited. And I got the letter in the mail that said that they were very excited that I was a top performer. However, based on my ethnic and my race qualifications, that of the 150 or so positions that they were going to hire, I was number 725 on the waiting list.
Oh my God.
So that was but that's a reality of what happens, right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's just kind of is what it is, especially for back then.
So do you think it's different now that way?
In some degree, yes. And I think it depends on the town or the city that you go to. And I mean, there's still those qualifications that they have to go through, but they're not as bad as, they're not as extreme as they were, back then.
Mm-hmm.
So, at that point, I continued to go back to school, continued to test. I tested a couple of other departments. And then I was doing an internship, with an ambulance company, and we got called to go pick up a little boy who was young. He was about 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And we had to pick him up because his father was just arrested for domestic violence. And not only did his father do a lot of bad things to this little boy's mother, but this little boy took a pretty bad... he took some beating from his dad, too. Mm-hmm. And had some knife wounds and a couple other things that were wrong with him. And ultimately, that little boy died. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... At that point, I just kind of looked at myself in the mirror and thought, you know what? I'm a young dude. I think it was, you know, at that time, right around 92 or 93. So I was about 23 years old. Mm-hmm. I just had gotten married. And I thought, you know what? I need to get out and go do something different in life. Because when you're going to school to do all this stuff, it takes a lot of commitment. And it's really difficult to have a job mm-hmm. while you're doing it because your studies take that much time and that much commitment. So between school and doing an internship on the ambulance and, you know, trying to volunteer at places, there's not a lot of time to go find a job. So you're kind of, you know, you're kind of you've heard the term starving musician, you know, and musicians are trying to get going. They spend all that time playing and they get paid very little. It's kind of the same. It's mm-hmm. kind of a bad analogy, but it's kind of the same thing. So I just decided at that point that I needed to go kind of pursue some other things and take a break from the firefighting thing. And so went and found a job and started working and kind of started getting my life moving with your mom, because we were just married at mm-hmm. that time. And then I just kind of kept moving, just kind of kept going down the path of the working world.
Okay. The job that you have today, mm-hmm. like, did you ever think that you would be doing what you're doing today?
Never.
Why?
I didn't ever think that not only would I be, you know, not to sound egotistical, but I never thought I would be a pretty good sales rep, mm-hmm. right? But not only that, but I never thought that I would be a regional director managing hundreds of millions of dollars in business for a large company. So I just, you know, growing up, I never thought that that was me. You know, I never thought that that was going to be what I would wind up doing. And just funny how things turn out.
All right, and then the last question. What is one piece of advice that you knew, like, back then?
One piece of advice that I wish I knew back then?
Yeah.
Man, I would take every chance I could. Really, I would take every chance I could if, you know, I wouldn't stop doing the things that were of interest to me because someone else might think it's stupid or might make fun of me or whatever it is these days, right? So if, you know what, if I pick a hobby, I mean, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. I would not stop. I would just continue doing things that made me happy.
So would you say that, like, in high school you would, like, kind of not do things because your friends didn't think they were cool?
Yeah, oh, yeah, man, all the cool kids. Yeah, the cool kids all hang together. You know that, right? And right? And so you might do, you know what? You might have a hobby, you know, such as you might play a sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're the only one in your group that plays that sport, you know?
Yeah.
And some kids feel pressure to not play that sport. Or, you know what? Maybe someone is a really good chess player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those kids, you know, maybe someone is like, oh, man, you play chess? Seriously? So my advice would be, and maybe that's, again, that's probably not a great analogy, but you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
My advice would be take chances and do the things that make you happy, regardless of what everyone around you says or thinks. You know what? Because the things that make you happy today will help mold you into the person you'll be in 30 years. And chances are great that those people that are influencing you today, you won't even know who they are in 30 years. Hopefully you'll have some of those friends around. Mm-hmm. But you know what? The people move on with life and things move. So that's my advice.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.